together with vendors who do SIFS products, right? And I will crank up the volume a little bit. Yeah, of course, you can have this one. Just let me check. So, yeah, let's try it this way.
You're right.
Have fun.
Oh, thanks.
I will hold up this little sign so you have a 10-minute
phone. Okay, 2-minute
phone. Just giving it
off. Thanks very much.
How's that?
Yep. I don't know if we need the mics. It's mainly for recording, I think. But.
Well, we were... good morning, everyone. We were caught with Jerry not being able to make it here today, so rather than cancel the session, we thought we'd have an interactive session to talk about working with vendors, and the sub-theme of our little interaction is how we can get a better experience for the user of equipment that vendors sell.
Yeah. So I'm usually the person that vendors initially talk to when working with Samba, as an OEM. So how does this happen? I thought what the way we might structure this is, because John, happily enough, works for a vendor who uses Samba. And so what I thought we would do is start by essentially conducting the kind of dialogue that we would normally have. So a vendor's using Samba. They don't need to tell the Samba team about it. They don't need to contact us. They can just download the code and use it. So how does a vendor usually get in touch with the Samba team? What normally happens? Well, to be honest, what normally happens is I read linuxdevices.net or something, and somebody announces a new NAS device that's come out, and I sort of download the firmware and have a look around, and it seems to be using Samba or whatever. And then I'll go scrounge around on their website, try and find the address of the VP of engineering or someone at that kind of level, and I'll basically send them an introductory email saying, "Hi, I'm Jeremy Ellis from the Samba team. I act as an OEM contact. Please talk to me. There's lots of things we can do for you." Now, it's interesting the reactions that I sometimes get to that, and maybe so. All right, you're AN vendor, better known as DELL,
well,
or whatever.
I should add also that I spent quite a number of years consulting and did a lot of work with vendors as well, and it was interesting how they would come to me, typically off the Samba support list.
Yeah.
And the opening of those discussions was often very interesting.
Yeah, so I mean, there I am. I've sent you that email. Mr. Vendor, how do you respond? What's your reaction to that?
Oh, that could be anything from complete denial of the fact that we use Samba.
Which I have seen, yes.
That goes something like this. Well, we don't talk about what components go into our products.
Yeah. Yes. Well, so when I get that kind of stonewalling, essentially what I'm not trying to make them admit to anything. What I'm trying to offer them is help. Because a lot of the time, I was at a vendor on Friday before I came out here, and I went through our roadmap, what we were going to be doing. They were already using Samba. They were happy to admit it, but they didn't know what they didn't know, if you know what I mean.
Well,
there were some uses of Samba that they were doing that were incorrect. They didn't know how to configure the rest of their product to actually make it work. We actually are lucky because we have another vendor here in the room who may want to comment. I don't know whether you feel like doing so, Justin, but so what we're hoping is, if there are other vendors in the room who want to talk about their experiences working with Samba and what we can do better, that would also be very helpful. So, I mean, normally I don't get the Stonewall response that you're mentioning. Normally I get a, who are you why...
Yeah. Who are you? What do you do?
Yes, and why are you helping us?
What's your interest?
Yes, and this is where I kind of have to explain that I'm essentially a vanity employee for Google who don't really care what I do, which is how I get the time, my 80% time to work on Samba. Normally when they find out I work for Google, for some reason that makes them a lot happier. I don't know why. but it's kind of like, well, we've heard of them, so how dangerous can this lunatic be? You know. So
that they say that they don't perceive Google as a threat yet.
Well, I mean, so Google doesn't sell storage devices, so, right. which also helps, yes. I think. Yeah, I'm not commenting on any previous or future whatever. Well, funnily enough, it doesn't have an SMB server on it. Although that's something that some people have actually ported Samba. I was looking through the Android market last night, and there are actually some Samba ports to the Android phone.
And there is JSIFs.
Yeah, there's JSIFs, but mainly I'm trying to push the Android guys to turn on the SIFS client inside the kernel by default. There are some Android vendors who've already done that. But the vendors who are selling clients, they're usually a different... they're a different set to the vendors who are selling server storage. The vendors who are... I'm much more involved with the vendors who are selling server storage than the ones who are selling clients. The client ones really don't need much help. It either works or it doesn't. There's nothing very sophisticated that they're doing. It's the server vendors who are actually trying to come up with high-performance, high-quality, very integrated products that tend to need the most help. So, come on, John, work with me here.
All right, so... I was contacted by a company that packages Samba, and that discussion went very simply, very interestingly. When can you come up to our office? Well, what's your problem? We can't talk about that over the phone. Well, when can you come to our office? Well, what do we need to talk about? Well, Samba, of course, but we have problems. But when can you come to our office? Mm. And, of course, after... setting a date. Well, you have to sign an NDA. And that was the first interesting bit. Tell us about the NDAs you've been...
So normally NDAs aren't much of a problem. I mean, you might think that they are. But I used to have a very sort of free software antagonistic. I'm not signing your NDA, goddammit. I'm not doing this. These days, I'm much more willing to sign NDAs because... Well, the interesting thing, what I normally do is I ask them not to ask me to sign an NDA to start with, but the reason that I do that, I explain to them is, look, if you have super secret proprietary technology, just don't tell me about it. I don't need to know, I don't want to know. What I can help you do, and this actually is usually the line that gets people very interested, because normally when I contact them and I explain I'm from the Samba team or whatever, their immediate fear is, oh no, it's a license enforcement action, because almost certainly, as Bradley pointed out, they're messing it up somehow. But I'm not usually that bothered about that. One of the things that I normally explain to them in my introductory email is, I can help you use this software with your proprietary products. I have another talk that I gave at the Linux Foundation a few weeks ago, actually talking about how the MOOF, and you may find this strange, but it's actually true that the MOOF from Samba from GPLv2 to GPLv3 actually makes it a lot easier for us to work with proprietary backend storage. And I can see people going, he's an idiot, what's he talking about? It's evil, it requires your encryption keys. The reason for this is, first of all, it's very rare that Samba is running on products that actually care about being locked down for encryption keys. And even if they are, they tend to want to lock down the kernel. They don't care so much about the file server piece. The second part of what makes Samba under GPLv3 so easy to work with proprietary software is, how many people are aware of the GPLv2 system library exemption? Has anyone heard of this? Free software guys, no one else. So there's... The reason that you can actually run GPL software on proprietary operating systems like Solaris and HPUX or whatever is there is a linking exemption for libraries that ship with the system library exception. Now, under GPLv2, that's a very narrow exception. It's kind of like, well, if it's a library that ships with the operating system and it's a standard interface, then it's... You know, then it's okay. You'd have to read the GPL2 for the full description. But it's actually quite a narrow exemption. The GPLv3 clarifies it immensely. And it makes it extremely explicit what you have to do to be a system library that makes you exempt. And essentially, all you have to do is you have to make it a standard interface callable by any process on the machine. It hasn't to be a secret interface, essentially. So once you've done that, once you've made it a standard interface and you've documented it and you've made it available to everybody, so it's not just an interface that's been designed specifically for Samba and Samba only, then you can use that on your system. You can link GPLv3 Samba to it, and there's absolutely no problems, even if that interface itself is implemented by the most hideously patented proprietary code that you could possibly imagine. So it actually makes it a lot easier to work with vendors. And so that's one of the hooks that I give them is, look, I know you guys have got something proprietary. This is probably how you're making your business. I can explain to you how not to mess up, how not to trip up when you're using Samba with those proprietary pieces.
So let's just step back a little bit to the NDA and talk about why companies insist on NDAs and what their concerns are, because as users, when we approach vendors who include Samba in their product and we start talking to them, we should be aware of their sensitivities, and then nonetheless for the fact that you're a user, as when the companies try to talk to someone from the Samba team.
Yeah.
And in my experience, the issues generally are they have business process that they do not want to disclose to the outside world. There's a lot of concern around that, some legitimate, some of it blown out of context. There's concern about product liability, and that's one we might come back to and you might care to address momentarily. The next one is they don't want to pre-announce products or shipping dates because really they can't change what has already been shipped in the marketplace, but invariably they have next generations coming down the pipeline. They don't want the shipping date of the next product to come out before they're ready to announce it. And lastly, of course, there are concerns about corporate liability in terms of shareholder interest and all of that sort of thing. So let's come back to that one about, where were we?
Can I just throw something in? I did a consulting job working with Samba SMB in general about 4 years ago for a company in Austin. It was very interesting because the founder of the company was very successful at startups. He had the most successful startup in Minnesota history and had then moved to Austin. Better driving for his Porsche SUV. But he came out and he said, we have an NDA, but I'm not going to ask you to sign it. I'm going to ask you to be honest with me. Would you just keep our secret secret? And my partner and I said, yeah, that makes sense to us. And he said, great, that's better than an NDA. And some people will do that. Some people will say, I'd rather have your honest promise, because if you sign an NDA and you're not honest, you're not going to keep it anyway.
Well, that's a very good point, Chris, actually.
Yeah.
But that's mainly why I don't like to, but I will sign NDAs. So long as they're not completely broad, like everything, you might ever learn, anything to do with SMB, you can never repeat. I mean, if they're insane NDAs, yes, I decline them. But if they're the normal sort of boilerplates, I mean, for instance, there is one OEM I have in Silicon Valley. You have to sign an NDA to get inside the building. I mean, it's meaningless. It means nothing. They stamp it on your badge. There's no way to decline it if you want to enter the building. So, I mean, at that point, it really doesn't mean anything.
So the thing to do is bring a picnic lunch and
have
them come out.
Well, I'm trying to fix their bugs. I'm trying to be helpful. Other ways I run into Samba vendors is at conferences. One of the OEMs I work hardest for was someone who I literally met at a storage conference. I didn't even know they had a Samba-based product, and they stood up and they were talking about it, and they kind of coughed and mentioned it had Samba inside it. I exchanged cards with the guy afterwards, and it turned out that not only were they heavily using Samba, but the headquarters was 2 minutes from where I worked down the road. This is one of the advantages, actually, of being in Silicon Valley, is that a lot of the places are just local, and I can kind of take an afternoon off from Google, drive down, and, Although, to be honest, I prefer them to come up to Google because the food's better, but...
So, Jeremy, how do you deal with, or have you dealt with, companies who have said, look, yes, we use Samba, but we're concerned about liability?
to be honest, that has never come up with me. They know I'm not a lawyer, I'm an engineer. I'm not going to... I mean, I can't go to them and say, look, I'm going to indemnify you. I have no ability to indemnify them for any product liabilities they might have. The software is provided as is. Most of the companies who are sophisticated enough to want to open a dialogue with us, they understand the meaning of the license, where essentially there's no guarantees, there's no warranties. I mean, the same is very true of proprietary software. It's very rare to get any warranties or admission of liability. Normally, you can sue the company to replace the CD that you got it from, or you can get a fresh stream of bits off the internet that that you originally got. So there's no. Yeah, the question of liability has never really come up in my discussions, because what I'm normally talking to them about is how to integrate, how to make Samba do what it is they want to do. Everybody has some slightly different thing that they want to do. They want to take... Essentially, if you look at most people doing the storage business, they're not in the business of writing a SIFS or SMB2 server. They couldn't care less. Such a thing is essentially a commodity. They don't want to have to care about it. And that's the advantages of working with Samba and the Samba team, is that we come in and say, all this SMB2 stuff, all the stuff that you really don't care about to make your storage work, we'll take care of that for you. You concentrate on the exciting stuff, and I'm getting to Bradley, at the back end that actually makes your product valuable. Bradley, thank you.
I just want to add a point to that warranty and liability. Yeah. You're totally right with choosing to go with proprietary software, but it's always been permitted under GPL that you can sell warranty and liability. And it's my belief that it's always a red herring. Because if people really wanted to buy liability insurance or other types of warranties for GPL software, there would be a market for it. I think the thing is that nobody really wants that. They just use that as a thing. So, oh, your license says no warranty, I can't use that. It's just a red herring. They don't actually want to pay for a warranty.
Wasn't there someone who actually tried to sell warranties at some point? Didn't HP do...
sell insurance for patent infringement, which is a little bit different.
I thought HP at some point offer...
That was for the SCO.
Yeah, they offered some kind of warranty.
Not like basically the software breaks kind of warranty.
Oh,
but
yeah.
People can go into business of, if your software fails at a critical moment, you have an insurance policy for $10 million.
That would be a bad business to be in. I wouldn't take that bet.
I think the actuary tables would be too big and it would be too expensive. That's why nobody wants to pay for it.
Yeah. Yeah, possibly so.
So vendors who use Samba come in typically they fit into one of three categories. Either they just want to ship hardware, in which case the software is a pain in the neck necessity that they just have to put in there. Or else they want to sell software, and the hardware is the pain in the neck part of the whole equation. And the third category are the ones who want to sell a service, and both the hardware and the software are a pain in the neck necessity.
I don't think that's strictly true. I think there are some people who have innovative hardware in combination with that. To be honest, they're the most interesting. Clients and OEMs to me are the ones who have something a little more than just a standard x86 box running a standard Linux distro with Samba on. They have something a little extra that makes it interesting to work with, that makes it a challenge. Because to be honest, if all you want to do is to sell a commodity SMB2 server, you can download Fedora, you can download OpenSUSE, you can buy contracts from Red Hat or Novell or whatever, and just put that in the box and sell it. I think that's probably the business that HP and parts of IBM are in. But the people that I tend to work with, they're the ones who have something just a little bit more exotic in terms of storage. They have something interesting they want to do. They have some high availability thing. I think it's very interesting. The talk that was in the other room that's just finished shows Cernet, who's another obviously Samba service provider, working with IBM, who wanted to do something quite innovative in terms of clustering. And so they're the most interesting customers, because at least from the Samba team perspective, most of us are engineers who just want to work on cool and interesting code. Obviously, we want it to be GPL, but we want to work on cool and interesting code. So, I mean, we want people to use our software. We're not in the business of putting barriers of people using our software. Obviously, we want them to comply with the license. But in most of the companies that I've worked with, there's been one or two who have prohibitions on making changes to Samba. And normally what I will do in that case is they will give me a set of requirements. And if the requirements are interesting and they're genuine improvements to Samba, I will usually code those things up for them for free. And so many of the changes that you actually see going into Samba from me are actually from requests from OEMs that it's kind of weird. I'm basically doing their work for them. For free, I don't charge them anything for doing it, but I'm doing it because it makes Samba better. It's got performance improvements, it's got feature improvements. But the only way that you can get to that point is if the OEM has a good enough relationship with you that they're willing to share with you the things that break and the things that don't work.
And that relationship is critical.
Yeah, that's
if without that you don't get to first base.
Yes, and you know I've. There is one vendor who should remain nameless, who I've offered to fly out and spend a week with, or whatever, and they're still, it's like, well, that's too much trouble. So, yes.
Well, that's too much trouble because they're on a release schedule, and until those products have shipped, now they're kind of time critical because they're trying to line all their ducks up before they push them out of the gate. Until that happens, they don't have bandwidth.
Yeah, that can happen. There can be release train issues when vendors need certain things by certain dates. And at this point, again, one of the advice that we can give to vendors is to say to them, look, the software that we're creating won't be ready in time for you. Here's an earlier version. Standardize on this for now and look at the pieces that are coming along in the next version for your next release. You know, I mean, I've said to people who are interested in SMB2 but have product deadlines, said, look, forget about it. We're not going to meet your product deadlines. Just ship with 3.5.8 or whatever. And then when you're doing your next refresh cycle, then you can look at the version of Samba that contains SMB2. There's just no way for you to get it in. And it won't. I would be lying to them if I told them it was going to be stable in the time frame that they needed. Basically.
Right.
And so that's the other thing is you have to. I'm not selling them anything, and this is what makes the relationship kind of unusual between most vendors and most businesses. I don't go into them and say, we're utterly wonderful, we'll do anything you want, and you know whatever their request is, I always say yes. I don't. Quite often I say, no, we can't do that, or we're not going to do that. And I'm very honest with them about our capabilities, where we fail, where other products might be a better fit for them, to be honest, because there's no point in trying to sell them something that you don't have.
So have you dealt with any vendor who does not treat Samba as part of an appliance? Who treat it as a more configurable entity? Because I haven't. Everyone that I've engaged with to help has treated the whole device as an appliance. It's a purpose-built tool. They have their special magic sauce sitting in the box, being the combination of software and hardware.
That's normally the way it works. Samba is very, very popular essentially in the embedded appliance market, where what you're selling people is a box that just runs, and you don't have to do anything to. If you want to start messing with the internals of Samba, to be honest, you should be running a Linux distro, because at that point, you can rebuild it, you can mess with parameters, you can tweak it to your heart's content. Chris?
That has generally been my experience as well for Samba. I do find a lot of vendors that are looking for SIFS knowledge for special purposes like LAN acceleration and things like that as well.
Right.
That's a good point. So what I think we're talking about here is Samba, the code, the product that you download and integrate into something. We're not talking about very custom uses of how SIFS works. And that is probably better contracted with individual companies rather than sort of trying to take the Samba binary and make it do what you want and explain how it works. Yeah, you at that point, essentially, you need people who have very in-depth knowledge of the protocols, how to modify them, But I mean, the nice thing is, it's essentially a guarantee of full employment for Samba team members. It's very easy for people on the Samba team who have a history of working on that code to find vendors who will employ them to continue to do so.
And if you're interested, just talk to me afterwards.
Yeah.
So let's get some feedback from the team here. How many of you have Samba using appliances in your organizations, specifically as an appliance, as a black box? And what is your experience with those appliances? Positive? It just works?
Well, since nobody else is jumping in on that, I'm going to go back to some of the things that we've talked about, Jeremy, and then I came across a couple of appliances a few years ago. I bought a Linksys device that was running Samba. But my experience with it was very poor because they had decided to use an old version of Samba that was years out of support. And that this was a very big problem, not just for us, but actually also for companies like Microsoft, because they get the call when they go to a new release.
This is true. Yeah.
Yeah.
And they get the call when they go to a new release, and suddenly the little device doesn't work on the network anymore because it wasn't updated enough to actually be part of the environment.
Yeah, and that's this. A lot of these appliances are essentially buy and throw away devices. There's no way to upgrade them. The better ones, of course, have upgrade path. But a lot of them, and these tend to be from the companies who don't talk to us, are embedded in firmware, no way to update them. They are what they are. You know, if a new version of Windows come out and they stop working, then essentially throw it away and buy another one, essentially, is the only option. You know, of course, with under the GPLv3, that's essentially a violation of the license. I'm hoping things will get better. I know one of Bradley's one of the things that Bradley's trying to do is to enable all devices that have embedded software like that to essentially have a community form around them that can produce alternate versions of firmware and keep older appliances alive, to be able to keep them more useful past their normal support life. Now, and that's one of the things that Samba should make it able for people to do. So there's kind of a range. We don't have a whiteboard, but there's a range. And this is, I gave a talk, I think, last year on working with Samba as an OEM, and this is kind of a follow-on from that. But there really is a range of people who just take the bits off Samba.org, put them in a box and ship them, and never talk to us, and that's okay. You know, they don't generally get much of the benefits of using Samba at that point because they don't know what our roadmap is. They get what they get. They just download whatever happens to be available at the time. Going up through the mid-range, up to the sort of the high-end or at least the more sophisticated users who actually make changes, feedback changes to Samba themselves and employ Samba team members. So, you know, essentially what... one of the things that I'm doing, and I'll be completely honest about this when I'm going into some OEMs and talking about how they use Samba and whatever, is, you know, I'm working on the Jeremy Allison Full Employment Act. So, you know, hey, if the gig at Google ever finishes, at least I have a bunch of other places that I know are using my code that I might be able to go and work for. I don't know whether... Do other Samba team members... Yeah, I mean, do you guys do that? Yeah? I guess you do too, Andrew, I think.
Well, I've got my current job. There's people I knew were using Samba.
Yes,
hey,
well...
I'm in the company, you've got a place for me to hang my shingle?
Yeah, so Andrew, I actually sort of expanded out from his previous job to find other Samba users within the company and migrate it. So, yeah, I mean, it's one of the benefits of working on the code is essentially because it's publicly available, it's free to use, it means that you can move from job to job essentially working on the same thing. Yeah, Volker.
I mean, this is probably the wrong audience for my comment, but one thing that I find difficult is Joe User at Hotmail.com comes in, he might be hiding that he is Bank of America or something.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah. That's a point I actually made last year in the talk. But Because I was trying to get people to... It is sometimes very hard to get Samba using organizations to basically to fess up and say, yes, we're using Samba, we need help. Because they like to hide behind Hotmail or Gmail or whatever accounts. And this, that's okay to start with, but once you've got someone from the Samba team talking to you, which actually can be hard if you're coming in from a Hotmail or Gmail account, because you seem to be representing just yourself. But if you can get a dialogue going at some point, it's good to basically say, no, I'm actually working for HP or Cisco behind the scenes, and we're doing something, and we need some help.
I would say it's not a good way to start, because usually your question gives you away. Not the company, but that you're hiding something. If you're the only one using it, you wouldn't be asking what to do in a situation where there are...
I'm probably the wrong guy to be. It seems to me you have a kind of a bit of an opportunity there. If I'm a consumer, I'm open to Verizon or someone, I want to buy an Asbox. I'm actually probably interested to know whether the Samba the box is a bunch of people talking to you guys or not.
That
would actually affect my buying decision.
That's actually really true. That would be. There's a very strong recommendation for people who are talking to us. Their products tend to be better, longer lasting. They tend to work better. The problem is we have no way of getting people to do that.
I think
we see no way of doing that. Some of them are talking to you, right?
Yes.
And you guys, we can get a registered trademark, but you already have a common law trademark on Samba. You guys could say Samba could make a Samba compatible mark or something.
Yeah.
And you could offer that up and say, if you come talk to us and you make sure that you've deployed Samba in a way the Samba team thinks is good, we'll give you a mark to put on your box that you can find when you go into Fry's or whatever and say, that's a Samba compatible. I know that the Samba team has actually made sure they didn't do something stupid with their configuration or using a bad version or something.
That
requires a process to be set up.
Right. Yes, that does require a qualification process.
It might be valuable. Yeah. That's my point. It might be worth the effort if it gets more of these OEMs talking to you.
Yeah. And that is something I've talked about doing before, and now I'm in a position I can actually do it. So, if people are interested, we can talk about that.
What happens if we turned on somebody because he has done whatever security for Samba?
Exactly.
Yeah.
You need a clear and open logo program.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah, this is one of the reasons why I've always shied away from that, because it's too much process for my engineering mind.
You know what I mean? You have the reverse, though. You can have flame device.
You go into Fry's and stamp on the box, not approved by Samba. Yeah, we would do a lot of those actually. Yeah, because in order to do a logo program, which is a nice idea, but it does require, I mean, real qualifications, which we don't really have the capability to do.
You say that, but that's not really what. There's a level that just says
But generally what people do is they look for well-known brands. And it's normally a well-known brand that gives away this is where it depends on the well-known brand. So it's like you buy something from Sony, you know that sucker's locked down. There's nothing you can do with that,
But most of the well-known brands in the space are not well-known brands. They are trademark, nameplate, licensing businesses. Yeah. They established a brand 15 years ago, and they haven't made a product in 10. They basically just... license their nameplate to whatever product is the most trademark.
Oh,
I won't name which names are that case, but they are very, very common names you see on the shelves of Fry's that all do that.
So is this coming down to no one in America makes anything anymore?
I think that's a good point, because when you go to a store, the brand label may in fact have been made by anyone anywhere in the world.
The issue is, I think, that we're not well known enough. Our logo, our brand, isn't to people who are in the industry, who are doing the work. We're well known enough to them, to consumers walking in, I don't think they would know. I don't think our brand would mean much to a consumer.
So just changing the direction a tiny little bit after your...
Well, I just wanted to say, I remind people that about 5 years ago when I went to the CES, that all the stuff coming from Taiwan was, and Asia in general, I should say China and such, was coming not with a works of Microsoft or SIFS compatible or SMB compatible. The most recognizable name was Samba.
I must admit that I've seen this used as a euphemism for the protocol. It's
exactly.
Like, we implement the Samba protocol.
Yeah. We are better known than the name of the protocol.
Yeah. Yeah. I just want to put that right there. Microsoft not documenting the Samba protocol.
Yeah.
Really?
Yes, I do appreciate that. I think that's true. And I also see on forums for devices that work, they often say, "Oh, make sure this thing is running Samba." So I think, and I hate the word, but is anyone familiar with the word prosumer? It's a horrible bastardization of English. But sort of the professional consumer probably knows our brand.
Right.
But, you know, the people who are setting up home theater systems, home audio systems, they probably know us because they have to buy NAS devices that will work with the high-end audio gear, which is all using SMB. User going in and buying a NAS box at Fry's, probably not. So I don't know. I mean, like I say, logos scare me. A program scares me because it's a lot of process to set up. It's a nice idea. It's something we used to be better at than we are. When people were selling boxed Linux, you know, like you could go into Fry's and buy your latest version of Red Hat or whatever, it would include Samba on the side of, you know, includes a list of included software. By the end of the period when people were selling boxed Linux software, they were taking our name off. We weren't interesting enough to be on there. It was sort of like, has Apache MySQL? We were a commodity by then.
Let me try a different question. Suppose I'm a vendor and I'm using Samba, I haven't really said anything, and I've managed to get a nice sale to some corporate who's bought a couple of thousand boxes on me,
mm-hmm.
and they plug them in and they take out the corporate network, and now I'm in a panic.
Mm-hmm.
Who do I talk to?
Well, you talk to that vendor who has some method of... you're the vendor. If at that point, if you haven't already established a relationship with us, you're kind of screwed. Seriously, you are. At that point, you go to the Samba website, you find somebody, probably Vulcan organization, you make a desperate call to Europe in the middle of the night. But that's the risks. But the same thing could happen with Linux. I mean, if you have a Linux-based product or any of the open source software, essentially it has to have passed your QA to a certain extent in order for you to put it out there. And if it breaks in a way that you didn't QA and you haven't established a relationship with the upstream, you're kind of hosed. And that's one of the reasons that's one of the reasons that people don't build products with Samba, because they're frightened of that very issue. But they're the people who aren't going to talk to me anyway, because if they were talking to me, you know, I would have referred them to a consulting company or someone. You know, one of the things I do when I'm actually talking to companies is to go to them and say, look, I'm helping you, but I'm giving you 80% time, my 80% time at Google, which is funded to make Samba better. You come to me with an absolute panic. I may be on vacation. I may be, you know, on a trip to Brazil. I may be at the Microsoft Plugfest, whatever. If you really need service level guarantees, you must contract with someone who can give you service level guarantees.
So on that score, what's the strangest communication you had with a company that wanted help on Samba?
That would have to be, and I can probably say this now because it's been longer. That was probably HP. Who was selling a NAS appliance that they had gotten from a third-party Chinese vendor, and Vista came out and the entire thing broke, nothing would work, and they had contacted the third-party vendor who had told them that it was impossible to fix. And it just so happened that And I'd seen these messages on our on the email list from Hotmail, of course, saying, help, it doesn't work with Vista. And I knew it worked with Vista, so I just hit delete. You know.
Well, the strangest one I've had was someone who wrote to the Samba mailing list asking for help. I responded. He replied by saying, because I had my... I sent it from my own email address rather than... And he contacted me, said, if you can help us, he said, I can't pay you, but I can send you boxes of chocolates.
going back, and this is going back a very long time, when Tridge first released Samba, the method of payment was to send him pizza. Or he said, right, oh, I like pizza. So people used to... People used to send him pizza, literally boxes, sort of FedEx boxes of pizza, which was rather rancid by the time it got there to Australia. But the nicest, one of the nicest people who was using Samba apparently called, he found where Tridge lived, called up the local pizza parlor, and he put in a bulk order of pizza, which they then used for the local Linux group meeting. So, you know, there are people who are willing to pay. But yeah, to finish the HP story, finally, because this was after I'd left HP, I'd worked at HP. Finally, someone who knew me from HP contacted me directly and said, "Can you help with this?" And you know, it was a share level security. They were running the thing in share level security, which people still do, God knows why. And that was a combination we hadn't tested, and it took 20 minutes work to fix it, basically. And they had a patch, and you know, they were happy, whatever. But that's what can happen to you when you're not really talking to upstream, when you're talking to someone who's a repackager. And I still love Bradley's quote from The Office yesterday with the guy. You wouldn't arrest a guy who was just passing drugs along, would you? Yeah, I just pass it along. Yeah, so that's the problem when you're not really dealing with upstream. You're dealing with people who just pass stuff along. So, I mean, I'm the gateway drug to Samba. So I'll go there, I'll talk to you, I'll, you know, give you the roadmap, tell you what we're planning to do, see if it fits, and then what normally happens is if they really need a service level agreement, I pass them on to somebody else. Because, I, you know, and that can be Volker's company or John's. Well, I'm not highly unreliable, I'm intermittently unreliable. So, yes.
Talker.
Yes. Yeah, well, I have a full-time job, and it's not providing them bug fixes. So, Volker, yes.
One thing that people also might see is what just happened in the other room. If you are using Samba in a big way, just put up enough knowledge inside, and we would be more than happy to, and we as in both Samba team, as in Senate, to educate you.
Yes.
And you will. Eventually you will end up in the Samba team.
Yes, as happened to Christian. Yeah. Yes, for those of you who didn't see, we formally accepted Christian Ambach, is it?
Ambach.
Ambach, thank you. Into the team.
He's working inside IBM. His main task now is Samba, and he's been doing it for 8 years or so.
And he produced some cracking bug reports.
Yes.
And fixes,
and
actually.
Good bug report,
I yes.
Yeah.
Yes, I mean, another way to get into the Samba team is to really point out flaws in our code. That's another good way to do it. So, hopefully, I think we're kind of...
Our time is up. We've got time for one question or comment from the floor before we close up.
Anyone have any questions? Or hopefully this was useful to sort of explain a little better how to work with us, how we can help, and how sometimes it's better to just walk away and say, I'm not dealing with those guys. They're not going to do what I need. Any other comments, questions? All right, well, thank you.
Well, thank you for your time.